So, first of all, thanks for the invitation. I'm very happy to be here. I'm going to present an idea which I think is new, is original, to produce very narrow resonances, hypothetical narrow resonances via positron annihilation. I'm not an experimentalist, also this talk deals a lot with experimental setup. So any feedback, any suggestion, any critique is quite welcome. So the idea is the following. We want to propose a new dark photon search technique. I concentrate on dark photons because the experiment is suitable to test an anomaly that had been observed in nuclear transition in beryllium 8. And the experiment, the beam facility are already there. If this idea can go through, it's sufficient to change a 100 micron target of diamond for a few centimeter target of tungsten. And that's it. So outline of my talk will be, first I will describe the production modes for dark photon searches in beam dump experiments. I will illustrate the proposal, and I will illustrate how this idea can work to cut away large part of the parameter space for this hypothetical dark photon of 17 MeV. I will illustrate a bit what is that about. So basically, there are two techniques for searching for dark photons in a beam dump experiment on fixed target. If you have electron beams, and there are many around the world, then you shoot the electron beam. It interacts with a nucleus of the target. You bremsstrahlung a dark photon, an up prime. And of course, the electron will change direction and go forward. So notice that this is an order alpha cube process, because you have an electromagnetic vertex here, and one there. That's not the whole story, because you have enhancement from coherent scattering if the atomic number, if Z is larger, and many other effects. But in principle, this is what you pay, alpha cube. If you have positron beams, and there are not many around the world, there is a positron beam at VET3. However, this is confined in a circular ring. So you cannot put in the middle of the ring a thick target. In fact, they plan to put just to inject hydrogen or some gas. There is a positron beam at the Frascati National Laboratory, and this is more suitable for fixed target experiment because it can be extracted from the ring and shoot on any target you like. And there is one in Cornell with a proposed experiment, which is, again, is this is missing mass up prime searches, so specific to search for up prime. It works like that. So you have the positron that annihilates with an electron in the target, and this mimics the E plus E minus into two photon annihilation. No? Just you substitute one photon with a dark photon, which is a massive object. So that is what this experiment have in mind, and this is an order alpha square process. You have two electromagnetic vertices. Forgot to say that since the dark photon are almost invisible, when you have the electromagnetic vertex between the electron or the positron and the dark photon, you also pay a factor of epsilon, where epsilon is a number which typically could be 10 to the minus 3, 10 to the minus 4, or even smaller. So this coupling, in general, is measured in units of the electromagnetic couplings with a factor which is, as I said, 10 to the minus 3, 10 to the minus 4. The idea here that we want to propose is the following. Use E plus E minus that directly annihilate into a massive spin one particle. This, as you see, is an order alpha process. And it's analogous of E plus E minus that goes into Z, what has been used in the process, typical process at lab. This is so only order alpha, but you see, while the width of the Z boson is about 2.5 GeV, here we deal with widths that are typically 10 to the minus 3, 10 to the minus 4 electron volt for the range of parameter I mentioned before, and for masses that are in the tens of MeV range, 10, 20, 100. So how can you tune an energy to hit this resonance if the resonance is so narrow? You don't need to do that, and this is the central idea. When positrons enter into matter, they undergo a continuous energy loss. So while propagating, they scan in energy, losing energy, and if you shoot a bit above the resonance, where you presume the resonance is, eventually you will hit the resonance because of this continuous energy loss. I have to add that this the lowest order process, and of course you need to add correction, and you can resample these soft photon emissions. Now that this topologically is the same diagram than in plus E minus annihilation, no? But from the physical point of view, it's completely different because this photon is constrained to be soft, let's say of energy less than one MeV, less than a fraction of an MeV. In order that when you emit such a photon, you don't jump on the other side of the resonance. You want to maintain the condition of continuous energy loss. This can be resummed by exponentiation. That's the idea. This has been stolen from this paper. And in fact, this is for the Bremsstrahlung production of a gamma prime or a prime. You see that there is an angle here. But just to give an idea, so you have a positron beam that comes in, it starts losing energy. If it hits the resonance, you produce an A'. Then this A' has to come out from the target, and it decays in a minus E plus. Since you produce through that process, that is an open decay mode. And you measure E plus, E minus, and you should be able to reconstruct within errors the beam energy, assuming that electrons in the target are at rest, which is not completely true. So peculiarity and advantages of this. This is assuming an initial beam with an energy peaked here, a Gaussian distribution, typically is 1% or 0.5%. That's the width of the Gaussian. T measures radiation length. So this is 0.05 radiation length. One radiation length in tungsten, which is the target I presume it will be used if this will be done, is 3 millimeters. So this is really a very short length at the beginning, but already you lose energy. And you tend to migrate the distribution to lower energies. At half radiation length, you approach an almost flat distribution. It becomes flat at 3/4 of a radiation length, and beyond that point, it starts peaking in the infrared at very low energy. So let's say everything, when you scan in energy, when the positron migrates to lower energy, everything happens in the first 2-3 millimeters. The resonant E plus minus production through A' production is only mildly dependent on epsilon. This is important. In fact, the resonant cross-section only depends on the M square, A'. There is no epsilon suppression. The effect of epsilon comes in because larger epsilon means a larger width of the resonance, and then it's more easy to hit the resonance. So you get more events for larger epsilon, but not because you get a larger cross-section, just because you get a wider resonance. That's important because whatever you do, you can exclude the epsilon at low values, very low values, because of this feature. Another nice feature is that to an excellent approximation, the decay length, so you produce the prime has some boost, it propagates, and there is a time dilation, so it can propagate a bit longer than you would expect just from the rest frame lifetime. And this is independent of the mass. That's, you want to explore a GeV mass, you would expect that decay is faster. That's not true, because a GeV mass requires a higher energy beam, and it gives a larger boost, which exactly compensates the fact that the lifetime, the decay, is faster. So in principle, while we are thinking about applying this to a beam of that can range between 250 MeV, 550 MeV, that's the positron energy in the Frascati beam test facility, you can imagine that it can be applied to positron beams of several GeV without loss in the sensitivity. Now, background. Background can be directly obtained from data collected below the resonance. So this is a plot which is, has no background. You see the number of events here is zero. But imagine you start shooting at low energy, and then you increase the energy. At some point, the tail of the Gaussian distribution will start getting to an energy sufficient to hit the resonance, and you start producing a plus and minus event. When you migrate to higher energy, you reach the top here, you have this kind of knee. And then, in this approximation, you are flat. So you see, you even don't need to simulate the background. Because if you see such a behavior, increasing the energy, definitely you have found a resonance. And the mass resolution seems to be a good one. There is an effect which is understudied. So everything here is done assuming that the electrons are at rest in the target, which is true for the core electrons. But in metals, the conduction electrons move, and move very fast. This might have an important effect, which is equivalent to broadening the resonance. Because you see, I hit an electron which is moving that direction, or another one, which is moving in the opposite direction. The Fermi energy is 4.5 electron volt, and the average energy of the conducting electrons is two-thirds of the Fermi energy. So I believe that this would probably enhance the number of events you can generate by at least one order of magnitude. But as I said, it's still under study. Final effect is that the loss of energy that I've been folding here with the initial Gaussian is a function that has been computed long ago for the electrons. But electrons do not annihilate. Positrons do. So there might be some effect that you should take into account due to the fact that while positrons propagate, you lose positrons because of annihilation into two photons. But I guess this effect is not very important, but we have not yet accounted for it. Let's go to a comparison. So I made up the comparison. So these are the parameters of the Daphne BTF, beam test facility. The maximum number of positrons you can have in 1 year is 10 to the 18. This is not a limitation, a technical limitation, but is an authorization limited because of safety rules. You cannot produce too much radiation. Technically, it can go to order of magnitude higher. The range of masses that you can scan, given the positron beam energy between 550 and 250 MeV, which is now available, is between 24 and 16. There is a plan maybe in 3 years to increase to 800 MeV, and this allows you to reach 28 MeV. So you see, the scan is, with any fixed target experiment is limited. This is not even 10 MeV in mass. Here is a comparison of production modes. I fixed the beam energy at 550 MeV for electrobremsstrahlung, annihilation, and the resonant mode. The integration, the target has been taken as a thin target of half radiation length. And here is the number of the A prime you produce, not the one that come out, just the process. So you have 10 to the 7 for Bremsstrahlung production. I recall you, it's alpha cube process. Almost 10 to the 9 for annihilation, and around the 10 to the 10 for resonant. Here you see what it's an example of what I was saying. Here we tune the resonant, the energy right on resonance. So this is the beam energy, the Gaussian, and we presume here there is a very narrow resonance. And you have 8 in 10 to the 9. If you put the energy above, this is 2 sigma above the resonance, you almost double the number of events because everything here is migrating down and scanning to the resonance. So that's just a way I thought we could illustrate the basic idea. Now, the Tomke anomaly in beryllium 8. This is a 6.8 sigma effect, so it's not a statistical fluctuation. But it's a strange signal. So I go very quickly here. They have studied transition from excited state of beryllium to the ground state, observing what are called internal electron-positron pair production. The branching here is, I think, 10 to the minus 5 with respect to nuclear, properly nuclear transition with photo emission. First, in a first paper, which is this physical review letter, they excited the beryllium to the 18.15 MeV state, and they observed, you can see here, that the plus and minus have a bump at opening angles, which are around 135 degrees. This bump is here. They are able to measure the energy to reconstruct the invariant mass, and the invariant mass peaks at around 16.6 MeV, 17 MeV, let's say. So this is the continuous, and this is what you expect if you produce an A prime with 17 MeV mass. If you sum the two, you get this. Later on, they repeated the experiment using another excited state, which they say is cleaner from the point of view of nuclear physics. The energy is lower, so if you have to produce with this transition a 17 MeV, you have a phase space suppression. And also you get a larger opening angle. This is what you would expect, because the boost of this heavy object, relatively heavy object, is smaller. They observe an opening angle around, peaking around 155 degrees, which is here. And the invariant mass is consistent with the one in the 18.15 MeV transition. So that is.
Is it published?
Yeah, in the proceedings. There are two proceedings that repeat the same. I forgot to put the reference, but I have here the proceedings. But this is intriguing because this effect, they claim, but we have a tornado here that can. In a paper by Feng and collaborators, they suggested they should be observed in this way, and they did the experiment and they observed. That is what they put in the proceeding. I don't know if it is exaggerated or not, but it's, I mean, if we have to take at face value this plot, then this is impressive, I would say. So parameters of the anomaly. So that's the transition. So excited state into ground state plus a prime, that decays in plus and minus. In this paper, all the constraints to produce this signal have been studied. So the mass is given by the collaboration. Coupling strength, of course, you need a certain value for the product of the nuclear couplings of the prime to the electron positron couplings. Couplings to proton are constrained by this process. This is the analogous. No, it's not the analogous because there is no anomaly contribution, but okay, by this type of decays, pions into a prime photon. So everything, or large part of the coupling, has to be put into the neutrons. That's why this type of a prime is called protophobic, which actually is the property of the Z, if you want, that is also protophobic. Electron coupling, so this, I recall you, this epsilon is measured in units of the electromagnetic coupling of the electron. There are lower limits from beam dump experiment. The strongest one is from E141, but I will put under scrutiny now in the next slide, this limit. And the upper limit is from effects in G minus 2 electron and from searches in E plus E minus a prime photon at Chloe in Frascati. So that's the nominal range that, for example, has been quoted in this paper. There are reasons to think that, in fact, the range is 6 in 10 to the minus 5, 1.4 in 10 to the minus 3. I question the limit. So that limit was derived in this paper, Sir Andreas, Ringwald, and another, confronting data from the E1041 paper of 87. And this is the plot they are using. The data are from 0.5 in energy upwards, so these 3 points. So first, the first thing you should wonder is, since you see this is E141, and you are almost at the kinematical limit, you know, the mass reach limit of the experiment. So maybe reading down data from this plot is subject to some uncertainty. But there is another reason. The cross-section, theoretical cross-section that you use to confront with the data and to get the limit, is computed adopting an approximation, which is precise, and an approximation that changes a process, which is E minus nucleus into E minus a prime nucleus. It is a 2-3 process into a 2-2 process. And this is an approximation that affects phase space integration. So this has been studied in this paper. The validity of the approximation has been applied to this experiment, E1037. So this is not relevant for us because we have other limits, but they gave this plot. This is linear, it's not logarithmic, but you see, this is the exact result. And this is what is called the improved WW approximation, which has been used in the paper. And you have a sizable reduction, which will be enough to move this violet line and miss the 17 MeV. So that's why I believe it's reasonable to be on the safe side to take this as the range of values for the electron coupling. Padme reach with E plus E minus, I call it resonant annihilation. Of course, whenever you produce an E prime on shell, you could think it is resonant. But you understood what I mean. So the reaching mass is between 16 MeV and 24, for the moment, MeV. I assume first a 5 centimeter of tungsten. This is because with 5 centimeter, if you shoot the positron, it's quite likely you don't have much background coming out. That needs a Monte Carlo. We have not yet the Monte Carlo, but the idea is that the thickness is enough that whatever comes out in any case is depressing energy, and it can be easily banded away from the detector with magnets. So with this, you get this limit. It's 1.9 in 10 to the minus 4. Note that everything is excluded below this. And below, because the smaller is epsilon, the more a prime come out. So the number of a primes increases when you decrease epsilon prime. And the reason is that the resonant cross-section does not depend on epsilon prime, but the lifetime does. So you decrease epsilon, you produce roughly the same number, but the number of a prime that comes out from the dump increases exponentially with epsilon squared. So that's why you can exclude below. If you can go to 2 centimeter, then of course many more come out because they decay much faster, but you reduce the dump, so you can still have some a prime coming out. Oh, this number has been derived by requiring that at least 10 events in a year are observed outside the dump. I draw by hand, that's not a mathematical plot, these 2 lines, and they are flat. In fact, they are not flat, but they bend down by a little factor of 2, just because if you increase the mass in some way, you have some sensitivity, and you lose some sensitivity. Padme exclusion reach in the original Bremsstrahlung, positron Bremsstrahlung mode is shown here on the top. This line is the limit from G minus 2 of the electron. And you see in the original setup, you cannot really do much. And you also, whenever you can go above the 17 MeV, it seems that G minus 2, which is G minus 2 is sensitive also to a prime that decays invisibly, it's already excluded. Well, this region here is completely open. And this is a very difficult region because at large epsilon prime, you produce Bremsstrahlung, you can see bump in missing energy distribution. At low epsilon prime, you can see displaced vertex, but there is a gap in the middle. The gap here in the middle is quite difficult to close. So here I conclude that that's all I wanted to say. The quotes in color are from the workshop webpage. So we want to propose a new creative use of a planet facility, which is Padme at Frascati, and an alternative method of probing new physics. And the new physics in this case is dark photons at high intensity accelerators, which is the beam test facility, again at Frascati. So thanks for your attention, and any comment, any suggestion, any critique is most welcome.
Since you have such a narrow entrance with uses, I wonder, are you actually getting sensitive to the details of the energy loss of the positron? I mean, if I imagine that, I mean, 10 minus 4 eV is much smaller than the atomic energy scale, and say the degradation is not truly continuous, but it sort of it happens in these big steps, then you need to ask the question, I mean, how long does it take to continuously fill, to hit the bin of a size of 10 minus 4 eV? So I wonder, what's the intensity?
So, you see, the electrons and positrons, they lose energy mainly via Bremsstrahlung. But there is, via Bremsstrahlung, probably the other energy is a bit large. We required that whatever you do, if you have a Gaussian beam, a positron will not jump outside the Gaussian. So that's the most naive things you can do. No? So you allow we use a 1% uncertainty, so the 2.8 MeV is the spread of the Gaussian. And we cut off the Bremsstrahlung emission at 1 MeV. So most of the positrons that emit a Bremsstrahlung photon and lose energy will remain inside the Gaussian. Next thing is that there is another energy loss, which is via ionization. And this is a few electron volts for each ionization. And it's about 1 MeV that you can lose in this way in one radiation length. So this is a more fine way of losing energy. With 10 to the 18 positron in 1 year, if you just take the beam and you plug it on the resonance, in any case you get 10 to the 6. Positrons that fit inside the resonance. So it's dense. The number of positrons is dense with respect to the resonance. And the final effect is the motion of the conducting electrons. And this is an order electron volt effect. So I believe, I learned because thanks of being perimeter, I was put in an office with a guy that is in condensed matter. So my idea was to heat up the dump to have a thermal motion. And maybe from your university you remember, this doesn't alter almost at all the properties of the conducting electrons because they follow a Fermi Dirac. So they move at a speed of 1,000 kilometers per second by themselves. And the equivalent temperature is 20,000 Kelvin. While the tungsten melts at 3,500 Kelvins. So it's irrelevant heating. They already, in metals, the conducting electron have a very large speed. And this is an effect that can widen, I believe, like when you observe spectral lines from stars. no, that you see that are broken. So this can widen to the same extent at the level of one electron, for example. I believe intuitively, but we didn't do. Finally, you should run a Monte Carlo, that's for sure. We integrate, the integration are continuous, but in the end, experimentalists must run a Monte Carlo.
So I have a question. You said that the thickness would be from 2 to 3 centimeters?
No, you can start from 10.
Okay.
For epsilon 10 to the minus 4. Even if you have 10 centimeters, which means nothing comes out, just the air prime, you get several thousand. So let's say we say that in 2 days you can rule out epsilon equals 10 to the minus 4. But when you increase epsilon, then you know the decay goes exponentially with epsilon square, and you have really to reduce.
And the background from QE, when you just produce a photon, first part of the target and then it converts to...
Very good.
That's, plus one,
so that's the most dangerous, is the punch-through photon. So you have to produce in the first beginning to retain all the energy, you have to produce a photon which carries almost all the energy of the beam. Second, the photon must propagate through all the dump. Third, it must convert in the last fraction of radiation length in order that the electron and positron will not lose energy. So that's the dangerous background. I don't know how to. We need the Monte Carlo. Monte Carlo will do that. But for 10 centimeters, this is quite unlikely.
For sure.
For 2 centimeters, maybe it starts being.
2 centimeters is 7 radiation lengths.
1 radiation length is 3 millimeters. Yes. But keeping in mind that what I think is really useful, at least as long as you don't have an overwhelming background, is this behavior. I think this has... Okay. You see this behavior. If you think that you know that the resonance is here, so measure the background below. Now, you move a few MeV, the background should be flat, not change much a few MeV. And you see this knee. So it's sufficient that this, you know, is the square root of the background, larger than the square root of the background, and you get the signal. I think this is a nice thing.
So I like this very much, but just for the purposes of discussion. You describe how the positron annihilation is order alpha, the electron pressure order alpha cube. However, electron beam, compared to positron, so much more intense.
So much?
More intense, your electron beam, right? That can easily beat that alpha squared.
Well, I'm not an experimentalist, but in Frascati, you know, you have basically the same number of positrons and of electrons. It's one order of magnitude factor.
But other electron beam facilities really.
Yes. No. I agree completely. I took some reference. I don't know even if it is very meaningful, this table that I put there, because I fixed the energy. And you should not forget that there is a coherent announcement from scattering of a nucleus that goes like z squared. That might compensate one alpha already. So take it with a grain of salt.
Just to follow up on this, so if we take the benchmarks from your slide, the base value, so 10 to 20 positron on target is that much less than what you might be able to do with, say, JLab, where if you dialed everything up to 11, then you can get maybe 10 to 22 or something like that. But that, I would think the bigger difference in producing it rather than through annihilation is just that in the case of annihilation, where you're changing the electrons from the target, as just a fixed non-relativistic object, and so the amount of energy that you can exploit from the beam is a lot less in terms of the reach. Whereas for radiative production, you get essentially just the full beam energy.
Yeah, that's true. You use the full and you get even larger boosts. You might get larger boosts. Here the boost is fixed.
They could presumably go up to higher. That's really only authorization.
No, look, this is, as I said, limited. You see, you have a 1.2 in 10 to the 11 for a bunch of 50 bunch a second, because it goes at 50 hertz. And pi in 10 to the 7 is the number of seconds in a year. And so you reach these, technically, they can do it. but they have to put concrete and change the setup and get authorization. While this can be done tomorrow, if you want.
What is the decay?
The decay length for 10 to the minus 4 epsilon is 0.8 centimeters.
4 points.
Let's say order of the centimeter when epsilon, when the ratio between, let's say, the electromagnetic coupling to the coupling of this object is 10 to the minus 4. If you increase it, it decays faster, and if you increase a factor of 2, the length decreases as e to the factor of 2 squared. So it decreases quickly.
But then isn't that your target?
Yes, but when you produce that to the 6, you have many that come out. Yes, many. We have the numbers, you see. These are the ones that you produce, and I think I put the table. Maybe you're right. But so I can tell you. You get coming out for epsilon something like 10 to the minus 4. You can get up to 10 to the 4. I remember we computed that in 2 days, epsilon 10 to the minus 4 with 10 centimeters can be ruled out. But when you go to epsilon equals 2.5, then you need 1 year to have 10 minutes.